Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 371. Welcome back to the show. I really appreciate you all coming back. Thanksgiving is just around the corner. So I wanted to first and foremost just say that I hope you all have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Myself, I don't really like Thanksgiving foods. It's a little bit rich for me, and aside from maybe pumpkin pie or pumpkin flavored cookies and all of that stuff, which is really not pumpkin flavored, is it? It's more of just cinnamon nutmeg flavor everything. But I hope you guys all have a great time. I'm going to dig into a bowl of Cocoa Puffs, which has been my tradition since I was 17 years old and decided I don't like turkey, but I like Cocoa Puffs, so... Anyway, happy Thanksgiving. A couple pieces in the news. I just want to give a really big thank you again to William A. Parks Jr., 33rd degree, for his awesome review of It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry, the book that we had written with John and myself. It was a really great review, and I'm so thankful for that. So if you wanted to read it, check it out in the Scottish Rite Journal, the Southern Jurisdiction magazine. Pretty fantastic. I also wanted to go ahead and mention that the Northern Jurisdiction is doing something for Giving Tuesday, which is just around the corner as well. They're going to do a telethon and raise some funds. Now, I think they're mostly for relief funds, so things like the Almoners Fund and maybe some other of the charities. So I would urge you to check that out. And since we're on charities... let me just mention that if you are friends with me on Facebook, I have no way to share this on the actual page of Whence Came You, but if we're buddies on Facebook, please consider donating a little bit of money. I'm raising some money for my birthday, which the proceeds are going to the House of the Temple, and I'm hoping to raise a good sum of money. Now, initially I set a goal of $200. We've surpassed that already. We're at 200%, so I think we have $400 raised, and all of that money is going to go to the House of the Temple, and I'm really excited about that. We're going to look into options. I'm not sure if I can ask them to earmark it for the library only, but if I can, that's what I would love to do. But of course, if not, I totally understand. The whole building needs upkeep and work, and they have a staff to maintain and everything else. So I'm just trying to help out where I can, and if we can raise some money to do that, then I'm all for it. So that's that. This week on the program, we have the first one that I would like to read for you. It involves William Preston. Now, the topic of William Preston comes up from time to time. He's got a really interesting story about him. He's one of the progenitors of the Masonic ritual that we use today, and his story is pretty interesting. So we'll start off with that, and I'm going to then let illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison close us out this week. He's got a special Thanksgiving episode of the Masonic Minute. So stay tuned for the rest of the program. I hope you enjoy. The Whence Came You podcast is brought to you through the generous support of Masonic Revival, contemporary Masonic designs made for today's Freemason. You don't have to settle for throwing a plain old square and compass on anything anymore. Now you get something truly designed and truly wonderful. Whether it's aprons, awesome pins, and wonderful neckwear, bow ties, ties, pocket squares, you name it, Masonic Revival has it. Head on over to MasonicRevival.com and check out what they have to offer. And make sure if you see Brother Edgar, tell him thanks for helping bring this program to all of you. And this program is also brought to you by all of you, those of you who support this program. We can't do it without you and your donations and all of your assistance, so thank you so much. To find out more about how you can assist this program, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. There you can make direct donations, sign up to be a monthly contributor, a fellow, or even a producer. And thanks very much to everybody for donating. One last plug right here in the beginning of the show. I did want to go ahead and mention that the pre-sale for the pins is over. The brand new producer's pin came in. They look fantastic. You can see a picture of those on our website or on our Facebook page if you want to get one. Awesome. If you already ordered one, it's on the way. We've tried out a new shipping method. I'm doing shipping right through PayPal now instead of going to the post office. So let me know if you have any issues with receiving your pin, whether the postage was off or anything else. I need to know, so give me some feedback on that. Likewise, if you get the pin and you really like it, take some pictures of it, put it on your lapel, show me where you're wearing your pin, and thanks for representing the Whence Came You podcast. You know, again, this is not just my show. This is not my thing. This is a show that we do for everybody out there, and you help bring it to us. So that's why it's the producer's pin. It's a special run. I hope you guys really like it. I am out of books. I will be ordering some more, so I'll have those in stock. I'm not going to stop the ordering process, so if you want, you can go ahead and order one, and I'll ship it out to you just as soon as the new ones come in. They do take probably 2.5 weeks to get, so just realize there'll be a slight delay in shipping the book if you order through us at the website. Otherwise, you certainly will get it just about the next day or 2 days if you have Amazon Prime. It is in stock on Amazon, so you can get it there. So the piece that I wanted to read for you today on this episode is about William Preston. And this actually doesn't say that it was from any particular magazine or anything, so I'm not real sure, but it's also by unknown, but it's from a reputable Masonic website. So it must be true, right? I actually looked this over and is solid information, and it's a really good history on William Preston. So without any further ado, William Preston. When we hear the name of William Preston, we are at once reminded of the Preston Lectures in Freemasonry. It is to Preston that we are indebted for what was the basis of our monitors of the present day. The story of his literary labors in the interest of the craft, and how they aided in making Masonry one of the leading educational influences during the closing decades of the 18th century, is one of absorbing interest to every member of this fraternity. William Preston was born in Edinburgh, Scotland, August 7th, Old Style Calendar, July 28th, 1742. His father was a writer to the signet, a law agent peculiar to Scotland and formerly eligible to the bench, therefore a man of much educational standing. He naturally desired to give his sons all the advantages which these schools of the day afforded. A young Preston's education was begun at an early age. He entered high school before he was 6 years old. After the death of his father, Preston withdrew from college and took employment as a secretary to Thomas Rudiman, a celebrated linguist, whose failing eyesight made it necessary for Preston to do much of the research work required by Rudiman in his classical and linguistic studies. At the demise of Thomas Rudiman, Preston became a printer in the establishment of Walter Rudiman, a brother of Thomas, to whom he had been formerly apprenticed. Evidence on Preston's literary ability was first shown when he compiled a catalog of Thomas Rudiman's books. After working in the printing office for about a year, a desire to follow his literary inclinations prevailed, and, well supplied with letters of introduction, he set out for London in 1760. One of these letters was addressed to William Stranahan, the king's printer, with whom Preston secured a position, remaining with Stranahan and his sons for many years. Preston possessed an unquenchable desire for knowledge, as was common to the times in which he lived. Man worketh from sun to sun. The 8-hour day, if known at all, was a rarity, and Preston supplanted his earlier education by studying after his 12-hour working day was over. The critical skill exercised in his daily vocation caused literary men of the period to call upon him for assistance and advice. His close association with the intellectual men of his time was attested by the discovery after his death of autographed presentation copies of the works of Gibbon, Hume, Robertson Blair, and others. The exact date of Preston's initiation is not known, but it occurred in London in 1762 or 1763. It has been satisfactorily ascertained that his mother lodge was the one meeting at the White Hart Tavern in Strand. This lodge was formed by a number of Edinburgh Masons sojourning in London who, after being refused an application for a charter by the Grand Lodge of Scotland, accepted a suggestion of the Scottish Grand Body that they apply to the ancient Grand Lodge of London. The ancients granted a dispensation to the brethren on March 2, 1763, and it is claimed by one 18th century biographer that Preston was the second person initiated under that dispensation. The minutes of Atoll, Ancient Grand Lodge, show that Lodge number 111 was constituted on or about April 20th, 1763, William Leslie, Charles Haldon, and John Irwin being the master and wardens, and Preston's name was listed as the 12th among the 22 on the roll of membership. It was not uncommon in those times, and the custom still prevails in England, Canada, and other countries, and among several grand jurisdictions in the United States, for Masons to belong to more than one lodge, and Preston and some other members of his mother lodge also became members of a lodge chartered by the Moderns, which met in Talbot Tavern in Strand. These brethren prevailed upon the membership of Lodge No. 111, which, in the meantime, had moved its meeting place to the Half Moon Tavern to apply to the Modern Grand Lodge for a charter. Lord Blaney, the Grand Master, granted a charter to the members of Lodge No. 111, which was constituted a second time on November 15, 1764, taking the name Caledonian Lodge No. 325. The lodge is still in existence, being number 134 on the present registry of the United Grand Lodge of England. Note, it is unknown if this lodge is still in existence. Back to the paper. The constitution of the new Caledonian Lodge was a noteworthy event because of the presence of many prominent Masons of the day. The ceremonies and addresses on this occasion made a deep impression upon Preston, being among the factors which induced him to make a serious study of Freemasonry. The desire to know more of the fraternity, its origin, and its teachings was intensified when he was elected worshipful master, for as he said, quote, "When I first had the honor to be elected master of a lodge, I thought it proper to inform myself fully of the general rules of the society, that I might be able to fulfill my own duty, and officially enforce obedience in others. The methods which I adopted, with this view, excited in some of superficial knowledge an absolute dislike of what they considered innovations, and in others who were better informed, a jealousy of preeminence, which the principles of Masonry ought to have checked." End quote. Preston entered into an extensive correspondence with Masons at home and abroad, extending his knowledge of the craft affairs, gathering the material which later found expression in his best-known book, Illustrations of Masonry. He delved into the most out-of-the-way places in search of Masonic lore and wisdom, by which the craft was greatly benefited. Preston was a frequent visitor to other lodges. He also asked to visit the Lodge of Antiquity No. 1, one of the four old lodges which formed the Grand Lodge of England in 1717. On that occasion, June 15, 1774, he, as elected a member of the lodge and also worshipful master at the same meeting. This unusual action is additional evidence of the regard in which he was held by the brethren of his day. While he had been master of several other lodges, he gave of his best in time and energy to the Lodge of Antiquity, which thrived greatly under his leadership. He became an active member of the Grand Lodge, serving on its Hall Committee, a committee appointed in 1773 for the purpose of superintending the erection of a Masonic Hall which had been projected, and he was later appointed Deputy Grand Secretary under James Heselin. In this capacity, he revived the foreign and country correspondences of the Grand Lodge, an easy matter for him because of his extensive personal correspondences with brethren outside of London. In 1777 occurred an event which was momentous in the Masonic affairs of the period. On account of the mock and satirical processions formed by rival societies, the modern Grand Lodge of England had forbidden its lodges and members to appear in public processions in regalia. The Lodge of Antiquity, on December 17, 1777, resolved to attend church services in a body on St. John's Day, the following 27th, selecting St. Distin's Church, only a short distance across the street from where the lodge met. Some of the members protested, saying it was contrary to Grand Lodge regulations, with the result that only 10 attend, these donning gloves and aprons in the church vestry, and then entering to hear the sermon. At the conclusion of the service, they returned to the lodge without first removing their Masonic clothing. This action was cause for debate, and the next meeting of the lodge, in which Preston expressed an opinion that the Lodge of Antiquity had never surrendered its rivalages and prerogatives when it participated in the formation of the Grand Lodge in 1717, and held that it could parade as it did in 1694. The Grand Lodge, however, could not afford to overlook such an option, especially when expressed by the leading Masonic scholar of the day, and consequently Preston was expelled. Because of this action of the Grand Lodge of Moderns, the Lodge of Antiquity severed its connection with the body, after dismissing from its membership three brethren who had made the original complaint against Preston, entered in relations with the revived Grand Lodge of All England at York, and formed what was known as the Grand Lodge of England south of the River Trent. The controversy with the Grand Lodge of Moderns was settled in 1787, and Preston was reinstated, all his honors and dignities restored, whereupon he resumed his Masonic activities. He organized the Order of Herodim, a society of Masonic scholars in which he taught his lectures, and through this medium, the lectures came to America and became the foundation for our monitors. To fully grasp the significance of Preston's labors, we must understand the conditions in England at the time he lived. The 17th century had been one of marked differences of opinion and the subject of government, religion, and economic conditions. The 18th century, following the ascension of Prince George of Hanover to the throne of England, as King George I witnessed an era of peace and prosperity in the country. With the exception of the wars against the French and later the Revolution in America, England met no obstacles to her conquests of trade. The strife of opening years of the century calmed down, and the people became adjusted to their new conditions. It became a period of formalism. Literature, which thrived under the patronage of the wealthy, partook of an ancient classical nature, spirit being subordinated to form and style. Detailed perfection of form was insisted upon in every activity, and undoubtedly the insistence for a letter-perfect ritualism, still so apparent in Freemasonry, had its origin in the closing years of the 18th century. While the well-to-do classes lived in comfort and ease, the laboring and farming classes had not yet entirely emerged from the advanced adverse conditions confronting them for so many decades. True, the cessation of wars and the development of domestic and foreign trade also had an influence in the circles, not actively participating in the new development. A spirit of freedom and independence continued to express itself. Public education, as we know it today, however, did not then exist. The schools were for the children of the wealthy only, being conducted by private interests and requiring the payment of tuition beyond the purse of the common people. Yet, education was eagerly sought. Knowledge was looked upon as the key which would unlock the door to intellectual and spiritual independence. While Preston began his schooling at an early age, even with his excellent start, he extended his education only by diligent work and the burning of much midnight oil. Imbued with the spirit of the day, he was anxious to place the available knowledge of the times before his fellow man. Therefore, when he discovered a vast body of traditional and historical lore on the old documents of the craft, he naturally seized upon the opportunity of modernizing the ritual in such a way as to make it accessible, a rudimentary knowledge of the arts and sciences, to the members of the fraternity. From 1765 to 1772, Preston engaged in personal research and correspondence with Freemasons at home and abroad, endeavoring to learn all he could about Freemasonry and the arts it encouraged. These efforts bore fruit in the form of his first book entitled Illustrations of Masonry, published in 1772. He had taken the old lectures and work of Freemasonry, revised them, and placed them in such a form as to receive the approval of the leading members of the craft. Encouraged by their favorable reception and sanctioned by the Grand Lodge, Preston employed, at his own expense, lectures to travel throughout the kingdom and place the lectures before the lodges. New editions of his book were demanded, and up to the present time it has gone through 20 editions in England, 6 in America, and several more in various European languages. After his death on April 1, 1818, it was found that Preston had provided a fund of £300 sterling in British consols, British government securities, the word being abbreviated from consolidated annuities. The interest from this fund to be set aside for the delivery of the Preston lectures once a year. The appointment of a lecturer was left to the Grand Master. These lectures were abandoned at about 1860, chiefly for the reason that they had been superseded by the lectures of Heming in the approved work of the United Grand Lodge of England, when that body was formed by the reunion of the ancient and moderns in 1813. The Preston work still survives, however, in the United States, although greatly modified by such American ritualists as Webb, Cross, Barney, and others. Had Preston not attained Masonic eminence through his efforts in other fields, his work in revising the lectures alone would entitle him to the plaudits and gratitude of the craft. Considering these old lectures in the light of our present-day knowledge and granting that they might be corrected and revised, it must be remembered that Preston's work was a tremendous step forward when we consider the spirit and conditions of his day. He was one of the first men to influence a change from the social and convivial standards which prevailed in the old lodges, and to make them centers for more practical and enduring efforts. His own progress in the craft is an illustration of its democracy, and an illustration of the equality of opportunity existing for those people who will apply themselves to the problems confronting the fraternity in our own times. From a position as the youngest entered apprentice standing in the northeast corner of his lodge, he progressed step by step until he reached a plane where he was recognized as the foremost Masonic scholar of his generation. While he did not wear the purple of the modern Grand Lodge in its highest stations, his contemporaries who had the honor have been forgotten, while the name of William Preston is still preeminent in the annals of Freemasonry. Equality of opportunity, as Freemasonry stands for it, means equality of opportunity for service. The honors of office are not the Masonic test of service. He who contributes to the Mason's search for light, light that will enable the craftsman to more intelligently and efficiently serve his God, his country, his neighbor, his family, and himself, is rendering the most enduring quality of service. This was true in Preston's time. It is equally true in ours. Fortunate is the lodge that has a modern Preston in its membership who seeks to lead the craft in its clearer understanding of the symbolism and the teachings of Freemasonry, to the end that Freemasons of today may sustain in the high standard of effective and unselfish service to mankind, which has characterized and distinguished the fraternity in the generations and ages gone. So that's the end of that piece. I hope you enjoyed it. Now comes the point in the show where I ask you to help support this show. How do we do that? Well, we have a bunch of different ways to do that today. If you head on over to WCYpodcast.com, you can click on direct donation through PayPal, which we briefly touched on in the beginning of the program. Of course, you can make that one-time donation, or you can sign up to be a monthly contributor. Contributing $2 a month, $5, or even $10 a month, whatever you choose, really helps the program out. Of course, we have a limited edition shop where you can pick up any number of items that come direct from us. Help us out by going to MasonicRevival.com, but also we have some other affiliates that are really important. Banker's Best, one of the most unique things we've ever done, is to work with Brother Levi Banker out of St. Louis, who owns his own company called Banker's Best Beard and Skincare. He's been so generous. If you head to WCYpodcast.com, click on More, then click on Banker's Best, and you can check out a bunch of the different products he's got. He's got a whole line of beard care products, skin care, oils, balms, all of this stuff, and he has been doing it a long time. He knows a lot about it. Everything is handmade, quality items. We even came up with the King Solomon's Reserve Beard Balm, which is a few years old now, but remains one of the great products that he still offers. Even the artwork on the bottle was done by a brother. The nice thing about this particular product is 50% of the proceeds come back to the program. If you're a history guy like me, then you'll be pleased to know that what makes the beard oil and balm very special is that it was made utilizing the fragrances specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location, which is amazing. So black fig and honey is the formula. Luxurious scent, as Levi says, truly fit for our first Grand Master. If you use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout, you'll also get a little bit of a percentage off. Please check that out. Banker's Best, or just head on over to buybankersbest.com. We also have a code with On It. You can go to our website, click on More, then go to On It, and you can click through any of the links here, or just go to onit.com and use the promo code WCY at checkout. You'll get 10% off, and they'll send a little bit back to the program to help us out. And of course, it's business time. The book that I wrote with John T. Ruark, it is making some real waves, and people are using it, and Seeing Success. So check that out on Amazon. You can click right to it. You can get it on Audible, Kindle, or in print, even on iBooks. And last but not least, I want to ask you to check out the Great Books program. You'll see the banner for it on the left-hand side, Intellectual Linear Progression. Use the promo code WCY, or you can just click on that link there, and you'll actually go right to the website and hear a little bit from Scott Hambrick about how awesome the program is. So that's it. I hope you guys enjoy, and thank you so much for helping us out. And with that, we're going to go right into this week's Masonic Minute, and we'll let illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison close us out this week. So to everybody out there, thank you so much for listening. A shorter episode this week. It's Thanksgiving. I hope you guys don't mind, but I hope you all have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Thank you so much for listening to this program. If you like this, hang out with us on the Masonic Roundtable, going live every Thursday at 9:30, 8:30 Central. We changed the time, new day, new time. I hope you guys check it out. In addition, the awesome Masonic blog, The Midnight Freemasons, where we publish 3 articles every single week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Check that out as well. That's where you can find some great stuff from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. And because I'm not coming back after this, illustrious brother Steve's going to take us out.
Happy Thanksgiving, brothers. I know as you listen to this, the pain of facing another Blue Monday is much tempered by the joy of the approaching 3-day work week. Admit it, you're going to take Friday off, aren't you? I've never made that my habit. My philosophy is it's easier to get things done when the office is as empty and quiet as a ghost town. Besides, that's Black Friday. You can sit in the safety of your office while throngs at Walmart and Target trample themselves to snag that big screen TV they don't really need. But hey, it's a bargain. But we all know there is a deeper meaning to the holiday. It's a time we can set aside to be with friends and family and to be thankful for those relationships, as well as the bounty of our country, which most of us share. And what's Masonic about that? Many lodges celebrate with a Thanksgiving dinner, or like my own lodge, provide one to a deserving family or group who might not have the means to celebrate with the rest of us. It's a springboard into a season of giving in which we can practice the second of our tenets of brotherly love, relief, and truth. We all know the story of the pilgrims and Indians celebrating the first Thanksgiving. First in the New World, it may have been, but it was not the first United States Thanksgiving since, at that time, the U.S. did not exist. Brother George Washington proclaimed that first U.S. official Thanksgiving celebration in 1789 when he declared November 26th to be set aside not to be thankful for the nation's bounty, but to give thanks for the newly adopted Constitution. Washington also enjoined people to, quote, unite in most humbly offering our prayers and supplications, beseeching God to pardon our national and other transgressions. Although celebrated off and on, usually unofficially, from that time forward, Thanksgiving did not become a permanent official U.S. holiday until Brother Franklin D. Roosevelt proclaimed it so in 1939. So once again, happy Thanksgiving, brothers. May we all reflect on what we have to be thankful for as we celebrate happily passed out in front of a football game in our tryptophan-induced stupors. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.